today. New Jersey is in the legislative process for a medical marijuana bill right now. This bill has been considered by the New Jersey legislature for a few years now, and Ken's going to talk a little bit more about how long it's been considered. Montel Williams was down here in 2006 at an assembly exploratory hearing. It was standing room only for that. He's a great supporter of medical marijuana access, and he certainly helped it out in 2006. But as we can see here on stage, as a memory of Cheryl Miller, in many ways, she was the one who really brought this about in New Jersey. You're going to hear now from the Coalition for Medical Marijuana of New Jersey, and it brings together individuals and groups behind the New Jersey Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act. First, we're going to hear from Ken Wolski. He is the co-founder of the Coalition for Medical Marijuana of New Jersey. He's a registered nurse with a master's degree in public administration. And right now, he is the executive director for the Coalition of Medical Marijuana of New Jersey. He's been an advocate of medical marijuana for 17 years. So first, we're going to hear from Ken, and then we're going to hear from Jim Miller. After that, with the coalition, we'll hear from Chuck Kwiatkowski. He testified before the New Jersey State Senate Health Committee, and his testimony was used on the floor of the Senate by a number of the senators as they voted forward in this bill and passed it 22-16. It takes incredible courage to stand up for medical marijuana, and it takes a really almost superhuman courage on the part of these patients. But I can tell you from looking at what happened in other states and what's happening here in New Jersey right now, that these are the most important advocates are the patients themselves. So we're going to start things off with Ken Wolski, the Coalition for Medical Marijuana of New Jersey.
Thank you so much for that warm welcome, and thank you for joining us here today. I am the executive director of the Coalition for Medical Marijuana in New Jersey. We were formed in 2003. The mission of our nonprofit organization is to educate the public about the benefits of safe and legal access to medical marijuana for patients who are under the care of a licensed physician. We believe that no one should suffer needlessly, and no one should be in prison for following the advice of a doctor. The following are some of the organizations that support immediate medical access to marijuana. The New Jersey State Nurses Association, slide please. The American Nurses Association, the American Academy of Family Physicians, the American Public Health Association, and the American College of Physicians. Now, I've worked as a registered nurse in Pennsylvania and New Jersey for 33 years. As a practicing member of the most trusted profession in America, according to the Gallup pollsters, I encourage you all to join us in support of this important legislation. For patients to suffer needlessly when a viable therapeutic agent is available is unacceptable. Slide, please. In 2002, the New Jersey State Nurses Association overwhelmingly passed a resolution recognizing the safety and efficacy of medical marijuana and urging the governor and the legislators to pass a law to permit medical marijuana in New Jersey. There are 110,000 RNs in New Jersey, and I estimate that 9 out of 10 RNs in New Jersey support this bill. What is it RNs do? We are constantly evaluating or assessing how patients are responding to therapeutic interventions. We are with patients 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We use our own eyes and ears and hands to assess patients. Our goals are to increase comfort, to prevent illness, to restore health, and to increase autonomy or independence. When we see the effectiveness of marijuana, when we see how marijuana relieves anxiety, relieves nausea and vomiting, relieves spasticity, relieves pain, and how it relieves the wasting syndrome, and how it does so safely and with manageable side effects, it's no wonder that there is overwhelming support for medical marijuana by RNs. Why aren't physicians more supportive? We have only about 600 physicians in New Jersey who have signed statements in support of medical marijuana. Only a handful of doctors have spoken out on this issue in favor of medical marijuana. Physicians, like nurses, are licensed by the states, but physicians also have a DEA license, which allows them to prescribe controlled substances. What the federal government gives, it can take away. Slide, please. Since the Clinton administration in 1996, the federal government has threatened to take away the DEA license of any physician who even discussed medical marijuana with his patients. This was overturned by the Supreme Court Conant decision, but years of threatening to destroy the careers of any doctor who discussed medical marijuana has had a chilling effect on doctors. Physicians in New Jersey are afraid, in some cases, to even write the word marijuana on a patient's chart when a patient asks about it. But access to medical marijuana is a patient's rights issue. It is the right of every patient to have access to the best treatment available. Our government has a long history of denying the fundamental rights of the American people. Slide, please. You have only to witness slavery, Jim Crow laws, discrimination against women, discrimination against gays and lesbians to see that this is so. Denying access to a safe and effective therapeutic agent is one more example of this. The struggle for medical marijuana takes its place among the great struggles for civil liberties that this country has seen. Slide, please. How did this come about? Marijuana is a drug that has been used medically for thousands of years. It's a drug that has never killed anyone. It's a drug that has been called the safest therapeutic agent known to man by a DEA judge. It is a drug that has been used successfully right here in the United States for over 100 years, and it's a drug about which over 100 articles have been written in scientific journals in the 19th century alone. How did this come about? Slide, please. In 1937, the Marijuana Tax Act was passed after a misinformation campaign by racist prohibitionists like Harry Anslinger. This act effectively removed marijuana from the medical uses in the United States. The American Medical Association testified against the Marijuana Tax Act. They said that there is no scientific evidence that marijuana presents a serious danger to the public health, and that even a limited prohibition against marijuana's social use would destroy the drug's use in therapeutic applications. Well, they were right about that. The Marijuana Tax Act passed, and marijuana was removed from the U.S. Pharmacopoeia in 1941. In 1969, the Marijuana Tax Act was declared unconstitutional. In 1970, Congress passed the Controlled Substances Act. This law established schedules for all known drugs and put marijuana in a Schedule I. Schedule I drugs have no recognized medical uses in the United States, are unsafe for use even under medical supervision, have a high potential for abuse, and are unavailable for prescriptions in the United States, and may only be obtained by federally authorized researchers for investigational purposes. Now, two things happened after the Controlled Substances Act passed. First, President Nixon appointed the Schaefer Commission to see if marijuana was properly classified. And second, some groups petitioned the federal government to reschedule marijuana to a Schedule II so that it would be available for doctors to prescribe. The Schaefer Commission was a hand-picked group of conservative politicians and academicians. They studied the issue for 2 years between 1970 and 1972. They went all around the country and to different parts of the world. They reviewed all the published literature. And what were their findings? They found that marijuana should not be a Schedule I drug. It shouldn't be a Schedule II, III, IV, or V. Marijuana should be decriminalized for adult use in the United States. The Schaefer Commission said the criminal law is too harsh a tool to apply to personal possession. It implies an overwhelming indictment of the behavior, which we believe is not appropriate. The actual and potential harm of use of this drug is not great enough to justify intrusion by the criminal law into private behavior. The Schaefer Commission also said that marijuana has important therapeutic qualities which should be aggressively explored. President Nixon ignored the results of the commission he appointed. The commission report was released 37 years ago in March 1972. Then also in 1972, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws and the Alliance for Cannabis Therapeutics petitioned the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs to reschedule marijuana to a Schedule II drug so doctors could prescribe it. But the BNDD, which was the precursor of the Drug Enforcement Administration, and then later the DEA, stonewalled this rescheduling effort for 14 years. They refused to hold hearings for 14 years, and they had to be taken to court three times before the hearings were conducted. And finally, in 1986, the hearings were held. that lasted 2 years. Now, there's an excellent book about these hearings called Marijuana, Medicine, and the Law by Robert Randall, published in 1988, and it details those 2 years of hearings. The DEA testified why marijuana should remain illegal. Physicians, nurses, researchers, and members of Normal and ACT testified why marijuana should be available. The central focus of the hearing was, does marijuana have an accepted use in the United States? And is marijuana safe for use under medical supervision? Slide, please. The decision was given by the Department of Justice DEA Administrative Law Judge Francis L. Young on September 6, 1988. Based upon the foregoing facts, the provisions of the Controlled Substances Act permit and require the transfer of marijuana from a Schedule I to Schedule II. The evidence in this record clearly shows that marijuana has been accepted as capable of relieving the distress of great numbers of very ill people and doing so with safety under medical supervision. It would be unreasoning, arbitrary, and capricious for the DEA to continue to stand in between these sufferers and the benefit of this substance in light of the evidence in this record. Marijuana in its natural form is one of the safest therapeutically active substances known to man. So the judge recommended that the administrator transfer marijuana from a Schedule I to a Schedule II. What happened? The administrator of the DEA overturned the judge's ruling. Judges' decisions are rarely overturned, but the DEA administrator did so, acting in an arbitrary, capricious, and unreasoning manner. So this is why the states must pass laws like the New Jersey Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act. Efforts to go through the federal government's due process on this issue have been unfairly frustrated at every turn. Slide, please. Finally, after 30 years, there are a few independent clinical studies of medical marijuana being done in the United States, mostly in California. There were about a dozen studies completed recently. The first study completed was Professor Donald Abrams' study of peripheral neuropathy in HIV-AIDS patients. He did that at the University of California in San Francisco. This study was published in a recent issue of the peer-reviewed journal Neurology. It cost almost $1 million to conduct this small study, but it was a rigorous scientific study using the gold standard of today, the double-blind, placebo-controlled clinical trial. It showed that marijuana was twice as effective as a placebo in relieving the peripheral neuropathy in AIDS patients. This study is being hailed as unassailable proof that marijuana is a valuable medicine. But there should be thousands of clinical studies on medical marijuana done right here in the United States. The federal government's record on medical marijuana is shameful. It defies logic, common sense, and science. Logic says that far more dangerous and addicting drugs than marijuana are prescribed by doctors. Common sense says that these issues ought to be decided between a patient and a doctor in the privacy of that relationship in the best interest of the patient. And there is a wealth of scientific evidence of marijuana's benefits, both worldwide and in the U.S., despite the federal government's repression of these studies. Slide, please. We are the Coalition for Medical Marijuana in New Jersey. We're an all-volunteer organization. We meet the second Tuesday of every month at the Lawrence Township Library in Mercer County from 7 to 9 p.m. The public is invited and welcome. We have snacks. For more information, visit our website, www.cmmnj.org. And we are encouraging people to support A804, the New Jersey Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act. As Chris said, this legislation is about halfway through the legislative process, having been passed by the Senate in February, and it's now awaiting a hearing in the Assembly Health Committee, and then by the entire Assembly, and Governor Corzine did say that he would sign the bill when it gets to his desk. But right now, there are people suffering waiting for this bill to pass. And for one person, this lengthy consideration of a scientifically proven therapy has gone on too long already. The medical marijuana effort was for many years a patient-led effort, championed by a courageous woman from her wheelchair, then her hospital bed. In many ways, seeing this legislation forward has been a fitting tribute to the woman who was the first to speak up and advocate publicly for modern medical marijuana in New Jersey. Her name is Cheryl Miller, and to speak about her effort Let's welcome her husband and co-founder of CMMJ, Jim Miller.
Now I get to do what I like to do best. I get to talk about Cheryl. It's a little hard for me to see the wheelchair empty, used as a memorial. But it serves a purpose. I married Cheryl in 1984. She was in a wheelchair because she had multiple sclerosis. I made a vow that day, a wedding vow. I promised her I would protect her. I promised her I would do for her whatever her arms or legs could until death do we part. I failed. I failed to keep that promise because at times the laws of New Jersey and our federal laws do work to keep that medicine from some very sick people. It wasn't an issue from 1984 till 1991 because we didn't know it could help Cheryl with her multiple sclerosis symptoms. We didn't know because she was not a social user. She just said no like she was supposed to. She's a good girl, and it cost her. In 1991, when her neurologist became scared, I became scared. He said he didn't think she was going to last six more months to the next visit. I started doing some extra research, and I came across an article, a reprint from the National Journal of the American Medical Association titled "Marijuana May Lessen MS Spasticity." That was 12 years before, and I didn't know. I did fail her. I got some marijuana illegally, the only way I could. And she didn't smoke, so I thought, well, I'll make it into a salad dressing. Kind of looks like oregano. You put oregano in a salad dressing. Apparently, though, it was the right thing to do. I didn't know then, but THC is fat soluble. And the fat in the salad dressing did absorb it. And I gave it to her, and for an hour, I didn't stretch her because I was afraid it wasn't going to work well enough, and this might have been the last resort. After an hour, I went to stretch her, and it wasn't a slight difference. It was an amazing difference. It was so amazing that I couldn't believe it because I'd had personal experience with marijuana, and I considered it to be quite an innocuous drug. It couldn't possibly do what her very dangerous drugs couldn't do. I gave her a choice. I said, hey, baby, we can take care of you one of two ways. We can be quiet and safe, or we can tell people. She didn't understand the options. She didn't understand that there was a choice. She said, don't you wish we'd known sooner? And, yeah. And she deduced that we shouldn't want something to have been done for us that we weren't willing to do for somebody else. In 1993, I pushed the wheelchair across the state of New Jersey with a sign on it, medical marijuana for multiple sclerosis. It was a 58-mile push that took 25 hours from Seaside to Trenton. I did so because we spent 2 years telling people the importance of this, and it wasn't interesting. It wasn't a news story. It was the most amazing thing in the world, but it wasn't news. So walking across the state with a sign like that, with the word marijuana out in public, people wanted to know what was going on. The newspapers had to show up. Television had to show up. We had to be a dog and pony show. The truth wasn't enough. 1998, Cheryl wasn't doing very well. She was bottom-dwelling, and we'd had enough, both of us. We wanted to go down swinging. So I brought her to Washington, where in front of the world media, 30 Capitol Police. She ate some marijuana in a congressman's office. She could only move her head, and they had to arrest her. They didn't know how to transport her. They didn't know how to fingerprint her. Her fingers were gnarled with spastic tightness. We were told to come back for arraignment on April 20th, 1998, 9 years ago today. And I thought, well, that's kind of a good sign, 420 going for arraignment. And as we knew what happened, we were told to go home. There would be no charges. Now, for a lot of people, you'd run for the door, but no. A voice yelled out, no. And it was me. I was being told to go. And I said, no, you knew that you weren't going to charge us, and you had me bring her to Washington? What kind of sick game is this? You brought us here, and maybe we're not going to leave until you do charge us. And the magistrate ever so delicately spoke down at Cheryl, said, you know, if you don't leave, I'm going to have to place you under arrest for contempt of court. And she didn't have much of a voice, but it was quiet and it was clear when she said, you won't charge us, will you? Who had who? The truth won. But that's not good enough. It's selective enforcement. You can see how sick she is. You can't see somebody's pain. And it shouldn't be selective enforcement. A year later, I laid her down in Congressman Bob Barr's doorway, former Congressman Bob Barr's doorway. The message, you want to walk all over medical marijuana patients, you can start with her. And ultimately, Cheryl made a commercial for Libertarian Party that helped usher Bob Barr out of office in 2002. This is not a new issue. This is not rushing to judgment here. It's been going on a long time. I could tell you how well it worked for Cheryl, but what I want to tell you is what it was like when she didn't have it. More often than not, she didn't have it. I couldn't grow it for her. I couldn't risk that. I couldn't risk going to jail. I could risk buying it, but I don't know if it's contaminated. Do I give it to her or not? She didn't have it more often than she did. And when she didn't, it hurt. But it didn't hurt just her. I think Neil made it abundantly clear that this goes far, way further than the people that we're talking about as patients or victims of failed drug policy. It affects whole families. Do you know what it's like to love somebody? I don't mean necessarily a wife or a husband, your father, your mother, kids. You got a brother or a sister you really love. Do you know what it's like to be helpless, to help them when they need it most, and have to sit and watch? But worst of all, do you know what it's like to love somebody like that? And they love you more than any human being has a right to be loved. And know that the reason you can't help them is because your state and your country forbids you to do what will help. Nobody should have to know that. And far too many people do. I had to explain to Cheryl one time in a hospital, we were watching a protest, and we'd protested a lot. We called it either a picket dot or a picket colon, depending whether it was just me or her there. We never had enough for a picket line. And there was 200 people protesting, and Cheryl said, what's going on? And I said, well, there's a Walmart coming to their neighborhood. And she looked perplexed. Wow, why do they hate Walmart so much? I said, I don't hate Walmart. They just don't want the traffic in their neighborhood. And she looked perplexed again, and I knew the next question, and I'm always honest with her, and I didn't wait for her to ask. I said, that's right. They care more about traffic in their neighborhood than they care about your well-being or anybody like you. 200 people will show up for that. Nobody shows up for you. It was harder then, though. It was the 1990s, it wasn't quite so open. It was breaking. It was getting better. But now, on election day, what, a million people sent tea bags to Washington. It wasn't going to do any good. They knew it. They just wanted to make a point. They spent what time and little energy it took to send tea bags to Washington because of their taxes. They didn't want more taxes. What good is lower taxes going to do if you can't help the person you love? Why is that more important to people? Why is that something people will stand up for? I couldn't explain it to Cheryl at the Walmart protest, and I couldn't explain it to her here, if she were here now, why that's more important. I think part of the problem is the media. I think that when it comes to reporting anything to do with marijuana, they'd rather see somebody like, well, me before I cleaned up for y'all, and then a sick person. They want to see somebody blowing smoke out at a camera than a person in a wheelchair who can't move anything but her head. They want to show something they think is going to sell papers. And I blame them because the same articles, they will say exactly what I'm saying. Then they'll turn to somebody else who counters everything I've said by saying, what about the children? You know, they're going to get confused, and they might start using drugs, and people are going to go on to using harder drugs, and ridiculous arguments that get put in the paper as if they might even be close to relevant to what we're talking about. Now, if that were two candidates, they'd call them on in and say, let's sit down and hash this out. What do you say? Oh, you hear what he said? What do you say about that? They let it go back and forth. And they say, here's what we think and here's who we endorse. Now, every major newspaper in New Jersey has endorsed this bill that is now stalled in the Assembly Health Committee. They've written glowing endorsements, but the story that goes along with it says kids are not smart enough to know what I'm saying is true and has nothing to do with them. I went to Libertarian New Jersey State Convention 2 years ago to beg that their candidates lead off with medical marijuana. Everybody knows they're for it anyway. 86% of people in New Jersey support it. 11% don't. It's a winner. It has a higher plurality of support than any issue anywhere. The chairman, incoming chairman, said, well, why don't you run? And when I was done laughing, I heard that logic in the back of my head. I shouldn't ask somebody to do something that I'm not willing to do myself. So I ran for New Jersey State Senate last time out. I ran a no money raised, no money spent campaign. I had one issue, but you know what it is. It's medical marijuana. When they asked me a question about, well, what about dualizing Route 9? Do you think it's something we can do? I said, I don't think it much matters if you're too hurt and sick to get out on the road because you don't have your medical marijuana. I was shameless. It didn't matter. My goal was to show people that it's a popular issue, and it's something that politicians need to embrace, not run from. It's something that I got 4.26% of the vote, better than any other Libertarian Party candidate did, and they raised money, had money, and didn't lead off with the issue. I want it to be a ball somebody picks up. I told the Democratic candidate running against me, I'd like to drop out. Why don't you embrace this issue? You're a Democrat. And she didn't, so I had to run. I'm going to do the same thing, I'm afraid, this year if this bill looks like it's going to stall, and I don't want to have to do that. Cheryl's last time in public in 2003 was to go to a Multiple Sclerosis Society's walk to tell them what we knew. This year, yesterday, 4 MS Society walks got information handed out about the bill that's now stalled in the Assembly Health Committee. 875 flyers were handed out to highly motivated people, and it was at 4 walks, not one. I had help, and I want to publicly thank Kathy, Ken, Lisa, and Chuck, the 4 people that helped me do this at the 4 other walks. The Health Committee may not bring this up, and I'm going to tell you real quick why. He's going to say, Herb Conway, the chairman's going to say, I don't know that we had the votes to get it out in committee. I understand government. I understand expediency. I understand if it's not going to get out of committee, that you don't want to waste time taking away from a bill that might do us some good. However, this is different. If he knows who's not going to vote and who is. We need to know. We're not going to be letting him say it's not going to get out of committee without saying who. Down the line, yes, no, maybe, probably not. And if he doesn't do that, then I'm going to have to find out, and I'm going to see that my new MS friends and me do find out. It's okay for him not to bring it up. It's not okay for him to have a secret vote. It's the same as going back behind a closed door and saying, let's all vote. Oh, okay, no, we're not doing it. That's not going to happen. I made another promise to Cheryl 4 days before she died. I promised her I would do till death do I part everything I can to get this done. I need help. We all need help. If anybody hasn't made that call and you live in New York, New Jersey, or Pennsylvania, if it would do any good, I'd get down on my knees and beg you now. But I think you know better. And I would deeply appreciate it if you would help finish what Cheryl started. Thank you.